Excellency Fiddlestick.
Yes. Hello. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. We're still here. What the hell is that all about? We are still here. 5/21, May 21st has come and gone, and we are all still here. What the hell happened? I was told repeatedly. I even went on broadcast here and mentioned the people who were telling us that May 21st was going to be the day. Judgment Day. The day that Jesus was going to come down and tell everybody, pretty much cherry-pick the good people from the bad. Take the good, leave the bad. Does the fact that I'm still here mean I'm bad? We're all bad, I guess. I don't know. But I think we're all going to remember where we were on May 21st when nothing happened. Much like the Kennedy assassination or something of that nature. It's not surprising. I don't think it's surprising to anybody here that we're all still here. That nothing went down on that night. I know where I was. I was in the middle of a theater that night watching a performance and figuring, well, looked down at my clock, at my phone, and saw 6:03. I said, well, it must be, time's come and gone. We're still here. This is good. This is good. In a way, you do feel bad for Mr. Camping, the California man who started this whole thing. Who went public with all the billboards and all the websites and everything. Not only him, but you feel bad for people who, there was a guy by the report in the New York Post, I know, who had spent $140,000 of his own money on this, on billboards and things like that, because he was so convinced. And let's just say he had a little bit of egg on his face come Sunday morning as well. Camping was apparently unreachable all weekend. People immediately, when 6 o'clock came and went in every single time zone, people all over the world were saying, let's see what Mr. Camping has to say now. So they went to his website, they tried to call their numbers, they got nothing. The thinking was he went into hiding, which was, nice job there, Campy. He came out with a statement on Monday, and he said he was, quote-unquote, flabbergasted that it didn't happen. You and me both, dude, so here we are. But I guess this guy acts as his own press agent. He's his own marketing wing. He's his own everything, I guess. He's a pure do-it-yourself operation. Didn't handle it very well. I think he needs a little help here. So what I've decided to do, I'm going to offer my services to Reverend Camping to try and weather this storm, because it's truly, he looks really bad right now. And like I said, we feel bad for the guy, but come up with a couple reasons, a couple things that he can say. Which might help him save face. So, and I'll do this free of charge for you, Harold, because you're that kind of guy. These are things he should say, or he could say, as excuses, if you will, for the fact that May 21st came and went with no rapture. Let's go. And the first one he came up with was, he could come out and say, we were completely, totally wrong and are seriously questioning our ideology, which could, in fact, be completely wrong. He probably won't go with this one. This one kind of refutes everything he's ever done. And for a guy who's been wrong before, he did make a prediction in 1994 for the same thing. Obviously, that came and went with nothing. He weathered that one without refuting everything he believes in. And just to note, this guy is sitting on a fortune. He's worth, apparently, I saw an estimate, he was worth $70 million. So apparently, predicting raptures and things like that can be a very profitable business. Something to think about, kids. So he probably won't go with that one. So I come up with a few more. He could say, hey, listen, thanks to our efforts, God has given us extra time. Keep checking our website and radio station for the updated rapture date. So he could say, paint himself as sort of a hero here and say, hey, we got your sorry asses a few extra days, so now you better just straighten up and fly right, listen to my radio stations, check my website, and help me buy more billboards. Probably won't say that either. He could also say, hey, listen, God changed his mind. He can do that because he's God. Duh. That might work. He could try that one. Doesn't put a whole lot of stock in accuracy in his apparently methodical calculations, but he could try that. He could also say, hey, it did happen. What's the matter? You didn't notice it? Well, then you must be one of the people who's left behind. That's going to be a tough sell because, truth be told, we all expected it to be a little more ceremonial, maybe some sort of explosions, rumbling in the sky. And it didn't even thunder where I was. I don't know about you guys, but not really. Didn't really get a lot of things there. He may not be able to fly with that excuse. But this is the number one one. I think this is the one he can go with. I think if he says this, he can save face, and he can. This is going to wrap it all in one nice, tidy package. Come right out and say, look, it was my mistake, my bad. In doing my calculations, I forgot to carry a 2. Just one simple calculation. I do it manually because I'm an old guy. I don't like machines. I was doing it by hand. I forgot to carry a 2, so I made a mistake. The new date is now August 24th, 2012, or some other date you can think of. But note the date. August 24th, 2012, prior to the end of the Mayan thing. So we can say, take that, Mayans, because that's what I think this whole thing's about. He's trying to steal some thunder from the Mayans, who are all dead, by the way. But their calendar apparently ran out of space on the stone they were carving, and people are taking that to mean that that's the end of the world in 2012. So we're going to go through all this bullshit again at the end of next year. But if he uses that statement, Mr. Camping, you can still steal the thunder from the Mayans, admit a mistake, and move on. He did say, by the way, when he finally came out, after he said he was flabbergasted, that the end of the world date for October 20-something is still on. You recall the original sequence of events he told us was going to be judgment on 5/21, 5 months of just hell on earth, basically, for those who didn't get magically lifted up. And then October 21st, I think 5 months exactly, was going to be the date where it all just ended. Now he's telling us he wants us to believe that the second part's going to happen without the first part happening. You got to pick one, dude. You can't rigidly cling to some ideology and cling to some timeline. And then when things don't work your way, sort of manipulate it to say, well, yeah, but whatever. Anyway, I wish him the best. He's providing the whole world with a lot of entertainment. I love some of the pranks people played where they left clothes lying on their lawn to make it look as if somebody was just raptured right out of them. I thought that was pretty funny. But on the other side of the coin, now we know Camping is the kind of a guy who, sort of a blowhard religious guy who is predicting these things. Another blowhard religious guy who's a little more, I don't want to say dangerous, but a little more damaging. Fred Phelps, I don't know if you ever heard of this guy. He is the head of a church which apparently, as far as I can tell, only consists of him and his own family. There's no extended members of this thing. He's the guy you may recall or you may have noticed who leads those protests at mostly military funerals, places where there's media. He will lead a protest, and they hold up their signs that say, basically, God hates fags. That's their big thing. They're really, really, too much, I think, really into gays. And their basic belief is that, when they're at a soldier's funeral protesting, they'll say that the reason these soldiers are dying is because he's punishing Americans, God's punishing Americans because we tolerate gays. Try and twist that around and do that math. I don't know how he got there, but whatever. But as if this guy isn't enough of a jackass, he's now going to show up on Sunday, this weekend, in Joplin, Missouri. Now, the people of Joplin have suffered enough. Everybody's thoughts go out to those poor people out there whose town was literally, pretty much wiped out by a tornado. And there's people still missing, and it's just a horrible, horrible situation. Just terrible. And to make a bad situation worse, this Phelps guy and his band of jackasses is going to descend on that town and spew out this crap about, hey, this reason this happened is because, God hates fags. And this you're talking to a bunch of people who probably could be very religious. You're in sort of a Bible-belt area there. And, you know, to sit there and to rub, you know, the people who are missing, they have family members who they can't find, and friends who are there one day and gone the next, and people they know are missing, and then this idiot and his idiot band is going to be there waving these signs around. I would caution him, because one thing he thrives on, I think, he knows he's protected by the First Amendment. First Amendment's a little bit messy in situations like this, but it's still the First Amendment. He can do this. He can go there and say whatever he wants. He can protest as long as he doesn't cause a violence. But it seems his goal is to provoke violence. I think if you read more about this guy, he and his group are all lawyers. They're all pretty smart. They all know the law. They know if they can provoke somebody into you know, taking a shot at him, that they're going to end up making some money here. And you go to military funerals, which they do, and they try to provoke people, which is, you know, takes colossal balls, I think, to sit there in front of grieving people, military people, and to try to provoke them. I mean, it's just insanity. But when you're going to be here in Joplin, you're going to be provoking people who have literally nothing to lose. I mean, they've lost everything. If one of these people decides to take a swing at you and knock you out, what are you going to do? Sue them? For what? They've lost everything. He might want to rethink this one. But it's just a matter of time, I think, before somebody does take some serious action on these people. Not advocating it, but I won't be surprised when it happens. But I think he just should be careful in Missouri when he's doing that. And the whole thing with, you know, basically he goes where the cameras are. You know, he'll go here because there'll be cameras here. There's cameras there. You know, all the cable stations are camping out there now. Military funerals, the press is there too. And to do this in this day and age where it's just reprehensible. But I thought of this because it is Memorial Day weekend this weekend. And everybody, you know, pay respect to those who made the ultimate sacrifice. And I noticed when I saw on a car one of those little magnets, little yellow ribbon, support our troops. And it dawned on me, is there anybody left now in 2011 who doesn't support our troops? I mean, can we move past this now? I mean, you started seeing this. I started seeing this in 1991 during Desert Storm. And it was a good way for everybody to sort of wash away their Vietnam guilt of, you know, being angry at soldiers. You know, we heard things soldiers did. We didn't like the war they were fighting. And people came back and they weren't treated very well. You know, it's a bad chapter in American history. So when Gulf War I came along, it was a chance for everybody to say, hey, we can make up for that now. We love our troops. We love the soldiers. And I think we've all sides of the political spectrum have come together now to realize, no matter what you think about the place they're going or the battle they're fighting or the conflict they've been sent into, whether you like that or not, you don't take that out. You don't take it out on the troops. The troops are not to be treated based on what they're fighting. I think it's universal now. And now I think if you run around with the support our troops magnet on your car, it's sort of a smug thing to say, yeah, I support the troops. Don't you? Why do you hate America? You know, I think we've moved past that. I think we can stop doing that now. It's like you're trying to raise awareness for something which everybody is aware of. You know, we get it. You got a magnet on your car. It doesn't make you any better than anybody else. You're kind of smug and you're kind of a jackass. So take it off. I should probably get some letters about that one. And I saw something the other day which struck me as odd. I hadn't seen in a while. I actually saw a hitchhiker. And I was driving down the street, and a guy was walking on our side of the road away from me, and he had his thumb out. I'm like, it just dawned on me then I had not seen a hitchhiker in so many years. It's something you don't see anymore. When we were younger, we used to hitchhike all the time. It was a very common thing. You see hitchhikers, you'd probably pick them up. You know, we're teenagers on one side of town trying to get to the other side of town. You throw your thumb out there and see what happens. You get picked up. You get in the person's car and they take, where are you going? I'm going over here. Okay. And they take you there. This seems mind-boggling now because I know everybody I know whose parents of a teenager would never in a million years want their kid doing this. Say, wherever you are, you call me and I'll come get you. We've all seen enough horror movies, because it's the beginning of every horror movie, isn't it, where, you know, somebody's hitchhiking in the rain, They get picked up by, you know, slashy Mick wielder, and he takes them out, and that's your opening credits, you know, smash cut to your credits. And every other bad Lifetime movie of the week probably involves a hitchhiker. And no good ever comes of it. Anybody hitchhiking in a movie is either going to be killed or they are the killer. So I doubt this person was able to get a ride because, again, who the hell picks up hitchhikers in 2011? It was just mind-boggling. And of course, this guy, and no matter what the person looks like, you automatically think the worst of him. If the guy looks raggedy, well, of course he looks raggedy. Look at him. Would you pick up this drifter? He's going to kill us. If he looks clean-cut, yeah. Every Lifetime killer is a clean-cut guy who everybody trusts, who ends up, you know, killing 17 ladies or something before the hero for, you know, what's her name, Tori Spelling is starring in it. She probably, you know, knifes him at the end or something like that. I don't know. Bottom line, nobody's picking up hitchhikers. Wow, look at the time. We're moving pretty good here. Just one more thing before I go. I noticed last week that Macho Man Randy Savage had died. It was just before the rapture was going to happen. Thought maybe he was the first guy to go. But it reminded me of a time in the 80s where, yes, I'll admit it, I did like professional wrestling in the 80s. It was fun. It was fun, and it was stupid, and everybody knew it was a joke, but it was a fun joke. It was a joke we were all kind of in on, you know? And I thought of Macho Man because he was one of the biggest personalities involved at the time, and I did actually get a chance to meet this guy probably about 20 years ago, just as the popularity was starting to wane a little bit for him and for the group he came in with, the Hulk Hogan's and everybody. And what amazed me about the guy was that when I actually met him in person, number one, he really talked like that. That voice you heard in those Slim Jim commercials, that was really that he actually spoke that way, which is weird because it was just a kind of a cartoony, deep, ooh, yeah, weird voice. And he, you know, when he spoke like that. But to see these guys, because I knew somebody who worked for the WWF at the time in a office capacity. He was a financial guy. So he got us tickets, and he got us backstage at this event. So to see these guys out of character, you realize these guys are actors, basically. They're playing roles. They're playing characters. One of the guys who, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, who was a notorious heel, in the ring, one of the nicest guys you ever met outside the ring, you know, shook your hand, how are you, nice to meet you, just amazingly normal. And then we see Macho Man, who, again, seemingly nice, not as cordial as Jim the Anvil was, but a nice guy. But the thing that struck me was how quickly, you know, these guys get it, where they have to go from that to being back in character again. And I saw this because it was sort of a low-budget operation. We were at this Westchester County Center, which, if you've ever been there, is more of a glorified auditorium than an actual theater or an arena. And since the guy I was with knew everybody, they said, hey, can you go get Randy's car, Randy Macho Man Savage's car, and pull it up to the door so we can get in and he can get out of here. And he's like, yeah, give me the keys, whatever. So the guy that I know looks at me and says, you want to come with me? I'm like, oh, hell yeah. So we go to the backstage door and open it up, and there's 100 kids out there. And then kids, young adults, whatever, but everybody probably from ages like 7 to 19, they're all out there, yay, Macho Man. Of course, they see me and this guy, Neil, and they say, you guys are nobodies, and we're able to walk right past them. And we go get Randy's, I think it's a Lincoln Town Car, of course, right? And he pulls up into the car, and as we're pulling up the car to the door, it's probably, there's a staircase, it's probably about a good 30 or 40 feet from the door to the stage to where the car is. And again, they're ignoring us, but they see the car pulling up, and the kids are starting to put two and two together. So, well, there they are. That's a car that's not theirs. That's going to be a wrestler's car, probably Randy. He's trying to get out the door. He opens the door to try to come out, and he's just swarmed. They're on him like bees on honey. And we're standing there by his car with the door open, car running, so Randy can just get in and leave. And this is where he automatically has to shift back into his character as bad wrestler guy. He starts coming down the stairs. It's taking him a heck of a long time because he's being swarmed by a bunch of kids who are screaming for, they just want a piece of the guy. They don't know if they want an autograph. They want something. They just want to be around him and in his presence. They want to be able to say, I touched him, or I smacked him in the arm or something. As he's slowly making his way to the car, you see the crowds moving with him. It's almost like, you know, it's like if you watch 20 little kids play soccer, they're all chasing the ball. Think of Randy as the ball. They're all just swarmed around him. He's moving his way down the stairs. He gets to the car, and now he's having trouble getting in his own car, which is running, by the way, gassed up and ready to go. And he's I can't tell if he's really getting pissed off or he's playing a character or maybe it's a little bit of both. But he screams at the top of his lungs, "Get the fuck away from me!" And when he said that, the kids scattered like it was as if somebody dropped a bomb, like an atom bomb, and this was like the aftershock. By the time the last word got out of his mouth, he probably had a 15-foot clearance on all sides of him as he got in the car. Eyes bulging, neck veins popping out. The kids were half shitting bricks, scared out of their pants, but half saying, "That's what we wanted. That's what we love. That's the Macho Man we love. That was awesome." He gets in the car and he peels away, and we're just laughing our asses off because he just blew right back into character. But it was sad that he died, and you know, it reminds us of a time that we enjoyed a guy like him. Anytime somebody dies like that, it always takes you back. Like the guy from Taxi just died. Also, Jeff Conaway, who you remember from Taxi, and he was also in Grease, the movie, whatever. It's just sad, you know, you see guys dying like that, but. Hey, let's not bring it down too much longer. Now that we bought ourselves some extra time, we got till October before it's all going to go to shit. So let's enjoy our time while we're here. Take good care of yourselves. You can follow me on Twitter at Bish24. You want to send an email, bish24@gmail.com. Obviously, we're on iTunes because some of you may be getting this from there. If not, go there and check it out. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thanks.